The great outdoors. Is there anything better? The birds singing, the sun shining, the breathtaking views, the prospect of going missing under mysterious circumstances. Up next, we're talking about the missing 411. Stay tuned, little Stardusties.
Sometimes
things are a bit off.
Align the stars with the bizarre.
The everyday that makes you say, hey!
This is Star Queen Paranormal for the enthusiasts of the strange and the extraordinary.
Star Queen Paranormal.
Good morrow, my little Stardusties. This is your divinator of dreams, sword maiden from outer space, the cryptid keeper, enthusiast of the strange and extraordinary, and the real reason you keep getting ads for items you only thought about but had not expressed wanting out loud. I am the ghost pirate, Exy. And as always, little Stardusties, it is my duty to remind you that the point of this podcast is not to convince anyone that any of this is real, as life requires a healthy dose of skepticism. Our goal is to present information for you to formulate your own opinions and ideas on some of the more curious subjects of our reality. Not to change your mind, but to broaden it. To present the idea. You kiddos stuck around for 10 whole episodes? I'm impressed, little Stardusties. Didn't think you had it in ya. Your Auntie Exy is very proud of you. Today's random stuff on the number 10 comes from mysticalnumbers.com. The number 10 symbolizes the completion of a cycle. It is the number of heaven and the world and universal creation. 10 is the very first number that needs a separate part. Number 10 was the holiest of numbers according to the Pythagoreans. They took their oaths by the number 10. Today's episode is going to be about the missing 411. I hope to be the first of many missing 411 episodes. However, the nature of some of the stories I will be sharing today involve children. Missing children, tragedies happening to children, possibilities. If that is something that makes you uncomfortable, if that is something that triggers you, because that is a topic that triggers me, I will give you a friendly reminder before I start the stories, so that you may skip at your leisure. You will not hurt my feelings. I will see you next week. But first, let's delve straight into Terrible Tarot! It's Terrible Tarot. Now, why is it called Terrible Tarot, you ask? I am not a psychic and do not claim to be one. I have a general idea of what the cards mean, but you wouldn't pay me for this reading. I use a plain Rider-Waite deck. And hey, if divination and tarot do not mesh with your beliefs, feel free to skip this part, but I can't tell you when it ends. Your cards today are the Star, the Seven of Cups, ooh, and the Knight of Swords. And my terrible interpretation, you have been inspired lately, and you have so many ideas. Like ideas bursting forth from your head. There's just so many. Or maybe opportunities even. And the advice from the cards is to charge. Go forth and make these dreams a reality.
Don't let your dreams be dreams. Just do it.
In more or less words. Follow your guiding star, little Stardusties. Because you know the path is paved in starlight. And that is my not so great interpretation of the tarot today. And for the month of July, which I realize this episode is going to launch at the end of July, I'm going to start a weekly, not-so-terrible tarot in my Patreon. Only for Patreon subscribers. I'm really impressed with my little Stardusties, and I am eternally grateful for my current Patreon subscribers. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for believing in me, and my dreams, and my podcast.
Seriously, thank you to my Patreon subscribers so far. But as a thank you and a weekly thing, not so terrible tarot, a longer interpretation of the collective tarot.
Let me flex my not-so-terrible tarot skills.
Today's quote from whatever I feel like quoting. Stay out of the forest! And that's directly from another podcast, Karen Kilgraff and Georgia Hardstark from My Favorite Murderer. Today's bizarre headline comes from NPR, published April 7th, 2022. A woman won $10 million after accidentally hitting the wrong button on a lottery vending machine. Last November, LaKendra Edwards had just put $40 into a lottery vending machine at a local supermarket in Los Angeles when some rude person bumped into her, causing her to accidentally push the wrong button on the machine. Edwards stated she had put $40 into a vending machine expecting to make her usual purchases of cheaper scratch-offs when a stranger bumped into her and accidentally hit the $30 200X scratchers ticket button. He just bumped into me, didn't say a thing, and walked out, Edwards said. Edwards also said she was annoyed because most of her money went to a single ticket. Edwards got to her car and scratched the $30 ticket, and to her disbelief, she had won the top prize of $10 million. Edwards says she's going to use her winnings to buy a house and start a non-profit organization. So, Stardusties, you never know when your next slip-up will be your next stroke of luck. And today we have a listener-submitted story. This story is from Jennifer from Texas. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for being a Stardusty. Jennifer says, I lived in a rental house when I was in college at Delta State University. My roommates and I would always hear strange noises. Things would fall. One day, I came home from work. Several cars were parked at the house, including my roommate's boyfriend. There was a glass door and a storm door that led into the house. I swear I saw a male who looked like a teenager to early 20-something standing at the door with a baseball cap on. I didn't think much about it. After all, I had one male roommate, and my other roommate's boyfriend was always there. The door was locked, though. I unlocked it and went inside. No one was home. Not very long after, we were at a party and some locals were talking about haunted houses. They mentioned a white house by the football stadium. We lived in a white house by the football stadium. We asked where exactly. They told us the house that was on our intersection. My roommate and I went white as a sheet. That was our house. A teenage boy had committed suicide there in the mid-90s. There has been stories ever since about it being haunted. Living there, I also experienced a lot of sleep paralysis. When I moved out, those episodes stopped. Wow, Jennifer, that was really interesting. And a little spooky. Thank you for sharing your story. I really love reading these personal stories. Keep them coming. Email us at starqueenparanormal@gmail.com or message us on Facebook. Today's episode is going to be a little longer, so I'm going to skip the promo for today. But real quick, just remember to check out Jessica and Amber at ShambleFest. Both of them have helped me and given me sage wisdom and wonderful, much appreciated advice for starting this podcast. Go check them out! And now is the time. Trigger warning again. If any tragedy, scary things about children particularly trigger you, I invite you to leave and just come back next week. The two cases I'm going to cover do cover children, and I know personally that this is one of my triggers. So you are invited to go ahead and tune out. You'll still always be my Stardusty. But your mental health is more important to me than the listeners, I promise. And it always will be. Also, I wanted to quickly mention, this is not going to be the only episode of Missing 411. I plan to cover more mysterious cases in the future. Studies show that exposure to nature has been linked to a host of benefits, including improved attention, lower stress, better mood, reduced risk of psychiatric disorders, and even upticks in empathy. This is according to the APA.org. But even outings in nature have the potential to turn into catastrophe. David Politis is an author and former police officer. According to his website, missing-411.com, Politis was investigating a disappearance in a national park. When he interviewed the park ranger confided that he was noticing a troubling trend. Over his years of involvement with numerous search and rescue operations at several national parks, he noticed the search and rescue would often end up the same way. The first week to 10 days of a disappearance, he would see a huge search and rescue presence with lots of press coverage. Following the first week, there seemed to be a sudden halt to press coverage, a discontinued search for victims, and no explanation from authorities. This new information weighed heavily on Politis's mind. He decided to look into it. But what Politis discovered only led to more questions. People of all ages were disappearing from national parks at an alarming rate. Many were under similar circumstances. Some right under the noses of other people. Some under mysterious circumstances. The families were often left without closure and no follow-up from park services. Politis also discovered that no official database existed for the number of disappearances from national parks. So the true number of disappearances per year is undetermined. One article from examiner.org said that it is estimated that 1,600 people per year go missing from national parks. Skeptics often refute this number because a great deal of people are actually found. But at least hundreds remain missing, even to this day. There are, of course, the likely explanations. Accidental falls or injuries, accidental drownings, wild animals, exposure. The more unsettling explanations, such as running across traffickers, serial killers, or other kinds of criminals, as the wilderness tends to be a good cover for nefarious deeds. But Politis set out to write a series of books about some of the more mysterious disappearances. Politis identified 52 hotspots in North America from which these strange disappearances would occur. And you can look up this map on your search engine of choice using the keywords missing 411 and clusters or cluster map. Among some of these eerie similarities for these disappearances, bad weather, heavy rainfall, snow, or drop in temperature would occur soon after the victim disappeared. Often, the weather and climate changes seemingly came from nowhere, and some were not predicted in the forecast. But it would be just enough of a weather change to delay search and rescue operations. Swamps and berry patches are often near where the missing were last seen or involved with their story in some way. Some of the missing would be out berry picking or just playing near berries. Disappearances would often happen in the afternoon or early evening. When and if the missing person is found, they often suffer a great deal of memory loss about going missing, or they have a rather sensational story about how they survived. The located are often semi-conscious or unconscious, are often found in previously searched locations, and in some cases, the located are found in impossible locations. One such case is Keith Parkins, whose case was mentioned in the first Missing 411 documentary. In April 1952, Edna Parkins took her children to visit her parents in Ritter, Oregon, a remote rural ranch in the mountains. It was an Easter visit to their grandparents, and patches of snow were speckled all over the ground. The ranch had recently been blessed with a newborn baby calf. So naturally, Keith and his older brothers went to the barn so that they could meet the new baby calf. As late morning shifted into noon, Edna called her children in for lunch. The older boys came to eat, but Keith, age 2 at the time, had not. When pressed about the whereabouts of their toddler brother, the older boys recalled that Keith had taken the long way around the barn, meaning he went around the other side of the barn. Edna went to the barn and searched far and wide. In the barn, around the barn, around the barbed wire fence. Keith was nowhere to be seen. And then her family wasted no time notifying authorities. The town of Ritter, Oregon, quickly gathered a team of volunteers and police, 200 strong, most of whom were very familiar with the terrain in the area. They searched for hours, even finding what they believed to be child's footprints 4 miles away from the ranch. The volunteers focused their search in that area. But the team of volunteers searched for hours and through the night. After all, how far could a 2-year-old get? But as the frigid night grew darker and colder, temperatures dropped below freezing, hope was dwindling, and many volunteers began to believe that this rescue mission was beginning to look a lot like a recovery mission. Little Keith had just seemed to vanish. But then, as all hope seemed lost, a miracle, a mystery. 19 hours had passed, 8 miles away, lying face down on a frozen pond. A tiny body was recovered, stiff and cold and covered in scratches, but to everyone's disbelief, alive, miraculously and thankfully. His hat and coat beside him, and little Keith had no memory of what happened. But the distance is what baffled the rescue team. How had such a tiny person covered so much distance? Canadian survival expert and television personality Les Stroud attempted to recreate the boy's journey on the Missing 411 documentary. The journey is 8 miles away as the crow flies, about a 12-mile journey if you factor in the terrain. Les noted there was zero visibility in the forest, even with a full moon, and he determined that a 2-year-old would not be able to make this journey on their own. Les was just as baffled as to how a 2-year-old made it that distance. Even without stopping, the distance he traveled seemed highly improbable. In the Missing 411 documentary, Keith was interviewed as an adult and still to this day has no recollection of those 19 hours he went missing. Another missing persons case of note was John Doe, age 3. John Doe and his family were out camping in Mount Shasta. The family had taken him fly fishing when he had gone missing. "It's like he was there 1 minute and gone the next," the family is quoted as saying. A search party was immediately launched, and after 5 hours of searching, he was found napping in an area of brush that had previously been searched. Little John Doe didn't say anything about his experience. Weeks went by, and his grandmother, lovingly referred to as Cappy, was babysitting little John Doe. While she was playing with him, John looked up at her. He examined her face. "I didn't like the other Grandma Cappy," he told her. Grandma Cappy was really confused and asked him what he meant. John told her that when he went missing, the other Cappy took him to a mountain cave and led him to a cold, dark room full of robots. He also said that there was a pile of dusty purses and piles of various kinds of weapons, such as guns and knives. He told her the other Cappy lit up from her head. She commanded him to defecate on a piece of paper. When John refused, he said the other Cappy got really angry and frustrated. The other Cappy also told John that he was from outer space and that he was implanted in someone else's uterus. When the other Cappy was done with him, she left him in that thicket and told him to wait for help. The real Cappy normally would have chalked this up to a child's vivid imagination. However, a year prior, she went camping in those same woods in Mount Shasta, not far from where John Doe had gone missing. While she was camping, she woke up face down in the dirt, outside of her sleeping bag, outside of her tent. She woke up with mysterious puncture wounds on her neck, and the friend she had gone with woke up with matching puncture wounds. Because of Grandma Cappy's unusual experience in the woods, she was more inclined to believe the story about the robots and the evil doppelganger. And she was extremely distraught at the idea that whatever it was lured her grandson away, using her form, her image. These are just two of hundreds of missing persons cases considered in the Missing 411. If you'd like to learn more, check out the Missing 411 books by David Politis, the documentary, The Missing 411. I will add a trigger warning to that documentary, as the first documentary involves children, and not all of them have a happy ending. The Missing 411 The Hunted is another documentary, but that one focuses on the disappearances of experienced outdoors people. And that one may be better suited for somebody who's a little more sensitive to child disappearances, because the cases in The Hunted are all adults. If you consider yourself outdoorsy and you're feeling a little disturbed by these stories, the recommendation is to carry a personal locator, compass, beacon, and maybe something brightly colored so helicopters and hikers can spot you easily. I know they have those little pocket-sized Mylar blankets, and they're often brightly colored for those kinds of emergencies. So what do you think, little Stardusties? What is your opinion on the Missing 411? Do you believe these are just the run-of-the-mill missing persons cases? Or are you inclined to believe that there's something more? Do you have your own mysterious wilderness stories you'd like to share? I know I do. Perhaps someday I'll post those on Patreon. But I would really love to hear yours, or any other paranormal encounters you may have. Write to us at starqueenparanormal@gmail.com. Check us out at Star Queen Paranormal on Facebook and Star Queen Paranormal on Instagram. All one word for Instagram. Or Make It Rain for your favorite space pirate at patreon.com/starqueenparanormal, where for as little as a dollar you can access exclusive content, all while funding the voyage of your favorite space pirate in need.
That be me hearties.
And so, Stardusties, be sure to be mindful and always be aware of your surroundings. Remember, there's safety in numbers. Always remember that you are mightier than the monsters. Until next time, on to the next phase in life.
May your path be paved in starlight. Arr.
Continue existing as you would, my dudes.